in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Dispensed with item number one. We only have six more left. Policy decision, Ray, gun control legislation. Don?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the minutes of our last meeting set out the testimony that the commission heard on both sides of the issue of whether or not this commission wants to go on record as recommending any type of gun registration or gun control legislation. Now we have here at the meeting this morning, if you need them, copies of House Bill 1546, which was introduced the last session. They're not in your books. I didn't know whether the members would want to refer to those as far as the discussion was concerned or not. But we have no other materials as far as the staff is concerned. We ordered after the subcommittee meeting about 6 weeks ago, we ordered copies of the staff report to the President's Commission on the Causes and Prevention of Violence in America, which set out some of the statistics with respect to the usage of firearms in the United States and some of the statistics that were referred to in the report that was submitted to the Commission by the Kennedy Action Corps. But unfortunately, we've been able to obtain copies from the Government Printing Office, who sent a follow-up, and we still haven't received those materials. So other than the materials that were submitted to you by the Kennedy Action Corps and the testimony you heard, and House Bill 1546, if you want to refer to it, as far as background information in this area, the staff really has nothing further to present to you.
As I understand, Mr. Chairman, the staff, the basic staff proposal, which subcommittee never got around to discussing in detail because we deferred it until the policy decision was made, would be essentially that there be a statewide place to obtain permits to carry concealable weapons.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that would be, and that would be a change from the existing law.
But that other than that, the staff proposal would not make any major change with respect to registration and control of sales.
No, it doesn't.
We can let the whole thing be a campaign issue, governor's race.
Gracie wants to register something else. Or license something else.
Poor day to discuss this, Mr. Chairman, right after filing days. So many good members of the commission are sitting around worrying about their futures.
I dare say if you really worried about your future, you wouldn't be on this commission.
No, Mr. Chairman, in 3 years, we finally got Bob down and let his hair grow out. That's one salary.
I got this haircut in Seville, I'll have you know.
By the barber of
that's why I'm saving.
You had to say it, didn't you?
That's why I'm saving it for so long.
Well, what do you want us to do with respect to gun control?
Mr. Chairman, I talked to Margot Perry, who was the young lady who came before the commission and argued on behalf of Kennedy Action Corps for some kind of gun control. She went to the Democratic Convention where she proposed the plank, and I don't know whether it passed or failed. It was kind of an interesting convention, I understand. And she said that the opposition came from both ends of the political spectrum, from the ultra-conservative, who saw
this. Are there any of those in the Democratic Party? I thought you fellows all claimed they were all Republicans.
We have some too. who, of course, saw it as some kind of invasion of their fundamental rights. And the other end of the spectrum, who really didn't want any firearms control because they wanted to have them readily available for the revolution. In law enforcement circles, there is a continuing and a progressing concern that our cities are going to become armed camps, and that the police are going to be totally unprepared. And in fact, a lot of places wonder if the police are even going to stand around being evidence if something really breaks out. The police will not be able to control the kind of situation that may come forth in some of our cities. I, in my short life, have spent most of it studying the issues involved in law enforcement. And I'm, from my interest in police work, have been increasingly concerned about the availability of not only firearms, but what about the other issues of military-type weapons? What about the issue of dynamite, bombs? What about the issue of Molotov cocktails? I think that it's probably incumbent on the Oregon Criminal Law Revision Commission to deal with these subjects. One of the problems, of course, is that it may be controversial. And, of course, I believe it probably is controversial. I think it's going to become less controversial as time goes on. I think there's going to be an awareness rather quickly that we have to do something rather dramatic in this area because of the incidents around the country. I think it would be foolish to recount the utterances of Dr. Martin Luther King on gun control or Robert Kennedy, although they certainly speak to the subject. This document that they tried to get, Firearms and Violence in American Life, the first portion of the book has what they call chapter summaries, and in about four pages you can get a rundown on what the book says in one paragraph per chapter. And I hope maybe the commission members might take a look at this. I feel very strongly that we would be shirking our responsibility if we don't deal with this subject. Therefore, I would move that as a matter of policy, staff and subcommittee be directed to explore the possibilities of control of firearms and ancillary devices, in particular emphasis on the control of handguns. I think the research by the President's Crime Commission, the research by the President's Commission on Civil Disorder, and the research done by the President's Commission on Cause and Prevention of Violence give us really no alternative but to deal with this issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Don, I can agree with you in principle. And I suppose I have to inquire of you as to the specifics, because I think that's where we're going to break down. I think we have to deal with the problem of gun control, and I think we have to make an improvement over the current Oregon statutes relating to firearms. However, don't we have a basic decision to make today with regard to, well, with regard to this? First, whether we're going to do anything, and two, if we do, whether we're going to go in the direction of licensing or registration. So when you make your motion, do you envision anything specific, such as registration of all guns, or licensing of gun owners, or licensing of particular kinds of gun owners?
I did not cite that, and I would leave it loose and non-specific because I think that there are a number of approaches. I tend to be probably at one end of the spectrum here on what control I would use. I would go to the point with handguns, so just almost outlawing them. I just think handguns are just a terrible evil, and I just don't think our society can continue to possess them. But I realize that would be probably a minority of one opinion. So I would leave it very broad for the subcommittee and the staff to work with on approaches to better control firearms in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Well, now, Can I just follow up on that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, you bet.
I don't think, I don't disagree, again, in principle, but I don't think that we can afford today to be loose and general in the policy decision that we make, because we're fighting a time factor, and I don't say that we should compromise something as important as this on grounds of expediency, but nevertheless, I think the Commission generally knows as much as it's going to know about the area, and that we should make render a specific directive to the staff so that it can come back by the next Commission meeting with something for us to act upon. This is going to be the last thing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the posture of the, this is the reason I asked Don the question I did, the posture of the situation is this, that the draft prepared by the staff, and which has not been discussed in detail by the subcommittee, would essentially continue the present law in Oregon, except that it would make a significant change in that for issuance of permits, it would be centralized, the permits would be issued by the state police, and thus, in effect, permits would no longer be issued by chiefs of police and sheriffs.
These would be permits to carry a concealed weapon.
Correct.
Not concealable, but concealed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a totally useless law.
I agree. In any event, we did not discuss the details of that or any other proposal because we felt that we needed the policy decision by the Commission on the question, as I understand it, registration and or licensing of either all guns or of some guns, and if so, what? So pursuant to that, we had the discussion last time, and now we're up to the moment of decision, I guess, but it seems to me that for the subcommittee to have any intelligent direction, it seems to me that the full commission has to tell us in what general areas they want us to operate. In other words, do you want us to consider registration of all guns, registration of some guns? Do you want us to consider licensing of all guns, licensing of some guns? Do you want us to consider along the lines that we've generally talked about so far in the present staff draft? And I hope that whatever votes are taken here today will be in those areas and perhaps others where there might be other different approaches that you might want to consider, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chandler.
I happen to agree with Mr. Clark, but I'm a little bothered by what I gather is the central broadness of the quote. Talks about dynamite. And the one that really turned me off is Molotov cocktails. This presumes that nobody can carry an empty whiskey bottle and a little tube to get some gasoline out of his car tank and a rag and a match. Because as I understand, that's all you need to make a Molotov cocktail. Maybe a piece of string tied right to the bottle. And I think that agree with Judge Byrne or with Senator Burns. I think that we've probably all made up our minds on any given part of this issue. I think that there are some things that we should do and some things that we cannot do. I don't think we could ever write a statute that would prohibit carrying the materials from which anybody can make a Molotov cocktail. It would be relatively easy to write a statute which would say make it illegal for anybody to carry a concealable weapon. It's a fairly simple matter if we decide to go that route. I would hope that Mr. Clark will withdraw his motion, which I don't think has been seconded. And
we don't have any.
That we start down the list and see where we get, starting with perhaps a proposal to require the licensing of the registration and licensing, because I don't think registration by itself, as I understand it, would give the state authority to withhold registration, which from people we might want to withhold it from. We start with a proposal for registration and licensing of handguns, or concealable weapons, concealable firearms weapons.
Ms. Lee?
Did you put that in a form of motion, did you? Yeah, I mean, if
there's already a motion.
There's already a motion.
Yeah,
would you vote that?
Yeah.
I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. Chairman. I realize that my position is a good deal more radical than anybody else's here, and
you're right in the middle of the road by your own description of the Democratic Convention. Exactly, right square.
It's not a bad place to be, you know.
Lee?
The first point I would make is that I think we either ought to decide we're going to do something of substantive importance, or we should delete it entirely from our report. I think what we've got here would be, it does no good what we've got here. And by just having anything to do with gun control in your report, you're walking into a political thicket. I say either let's delete the entire thing out of our report, or let's do something substantive about it. I am willing to vote in favor of a proposal to license handguns, the additional proviso that we're not going to do a damn thing about rifles and shotguns in this state. That's out of the question. I think we'd be making a lot of progress if we did that. I certainly don't think we ought to go with a halfway type of thing here, which basically does no good, doesn't get the problem at all. When you talk about concealed weapons,
Mr. Chairman,
Judge Burns,
so as to get, is there a motion?
There isn't at this
so
point.
So as to get a motion, get it started, I will move that the commission direct the subcommittee and staff to prepare a draft which essentially would call for licensing and registration of all firearms. And I will add, having made the motion, I will add that if that is defeated, I then propose to move that similar direction be given to licensing and registration of handguns. And if that is defeated, then I expect to propose another motion. Which I haven't figured out yet.
Well,
it seems to me that in order to have the subcommittee adequately instructed as to what areas you want us to work in, that we're going to have to.
Why don't you first move with reference to the handguns, and then when that's adopted, and move to add everybody else's gun.
I'd prefer to go I will
move to have the commission direct the subcommittee and staff to study and prepare a draft of a proposal, the essentials of which would call for licensing and registration of all handguns.
By licensing, we're talking about the individual registration, we're talking about the gun.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask Judge Burns a question before I do. I think that when we talk about gun control, we're talking about two specific objectives. And I think we have to keep these in mind as we discuss how we're going to affect one. Have legislation, if possible, to keep guns out of the hands of undesirables. And whether that's possible or not is certainly problematical, but I think it at least merits our...
That's licensed.
That's licensed. To set up certain objective criteria administered by someone before which a person can have a license to buy guns. Is this not what you mean, Jim? And the second thing, which I think really, and I talked about this when the Kennedy people were here, is really more worthy of achieving, or better able to achieve, and that is to trace guns to the owner or the perpetrator after the commission of crime. And that's registration, isn't it? Some sort of a central clearinghouse or something where after a homicide, if the gun could be, if the gun is there or located through the registration device or whatever, you might possibly get back to the person that has hands. I don't know whether that's possible.
Well,
but is that what you're talking about in registration?
First, let me say, I'm not making these motions to try to put anybody on the spot.
Well,
I recognize that I'm in a much better position than many of you, simply because I'm not up this year, and in any event, I'm in the type of office where these considerations are a lot less important. But when I say licensing and registration, I mean generally a broad situation where provision will be made for the registration of handguns and a licensing scheme which will authorize the average citizen to possess and use the gun, but which will prevent certain classes of persons from doing so, from having a license. I'm not saying that I would buy all of the classes that were mentioned last time, but I would certainly buy some of them, and I assume that any licensing provision would have to provide for sound, reasonable methods of obtaining licenses and probably some review of licensing decisions, perhaps by certain courts, although I don't look for that kind of work, but somewhere you'd have to have, as you do in generally in your licensing situations of other areas, there's some kind of review provision. So that's what I, that's the thrust of the motion.
Does a handgun have how long a barrel?
14 inches.
Is that what it is? Now, I have a 22 high standard. I think it has about a 10-inch barrel. Is that a handgun?
Mm-hmm.
How about these 14-inch 410 and 44 combined? Now, they're legal under the federal. Is that a handgun? Should we have a definition of a handgun?
I think you got to have a definition.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Well, I think there are plenty of sources for the staff and certainly the rule for definition.
The present definition is pistol, revolver, and firearms capably concealed upon the person applied to include all firearms having a barrel less than 12 inches in length.
One thing more, would you contemplate, Don, any provisions with respect to a licensee loaning his gun, a handgun, once he had it?
Presume the licensee is going to be presumed to be in control. He is in an automobile. Owner?
Mr. Chairman, I
yeah, but you got to have a license to borrow an automobile.
Yes.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Chairman, my view about this thing is that unless you're willing to go very close to a ban on handguns, I think you can't ban them entirely. That's why I think it has to be a licensing law. I think it has to be a very strict licensing law, which the applicant has to show a legitimate reason why he wants the thing. And strict accountability. Frankly, it isn't worth it to me to stick out my political neck on gun control unless we go that far. Registration, you mean, to give the police is simply an evidentiary device which is going to create a political storm in the state is to me ridiculous because it doesn't do that much good. We either do something of substantive value in the thing or forget it. That's what I would say. And I think that there is, in most cases, it's pretty hard to prove much of a, or establish much of a legitimate use for handguns in our society.
How about simply to protect your home against intruders or burglary or rapists?
You've got to name the intruder first.
Target practice in your basement. Some of people I think have a gun range set up for handguns in their basement, having fun with it.
And establish it. But I think you're going to, when you put tight control on how it can be used and what's authorized for, I think protection of the home is legitimate for the person who lives out in the rural area. I do not think we want effective gun control that will allow people in the city to maintain handgun.
Well,
I think one of the an equal protection question
bugs the people who oppose this sort of thing is the fee that's charged for both licensing and registration. I think we, if Judge Burns doesn't object, I think that the minutes ought to show the direction of the subcommittee and the staff, if this motion's approved, be that the fees shall be sufficient to pay the cost of administering the program only. Don't go out and set up a $50 licensing fee or something of this sort. This is a means of reducing the number of people who ask for licenses.
I'm sympathetic to that. However, I think the thing doesn't automate little ways and means. Is that any provision that to do with money?
Yeah, it would. I'm just wondering, would we send the whole code up to the Ways and Means?
That guarantees it's dead.
Well, we discussed this question a little bit in the subcommittee, Mr. Chairman, with respect to our preliminary draft, which made some changes regarding the concealed weapons permits, and that it would place that authority in the hands of the state police, and made some increase in the permit fee, which is now I think 50 cents, and we were proposing I think to raise it to $3. And so we asked the legislative fiscal office with respect to that proposal what the fiscal implications would be, and the report I received from that office was that this would have a fiscal impact that would have to, from the standpoint of, if nothing else, the money required to administer the program from a personnel standpoint, that sort of thing. So I think in answer to Mr. Clark's question, that this would require approval by Ways and Means.
Well, if it's part of, if it's put in the whole package, Mr. Chairman, and it does require approval by the Ways and Means Committee, the whole bill, the whole code, the whole 300 pages have to go to the Ways and Means Committee.
That's my thought. I'm wondering, we haven't done this in the past, and perhaps we shouldn't do it now. I don't know, I'm merely thinking aloud. Do you think that there's a justification in this particular area for us to depart from precedent of this commission and submit this as an entire, if we pass it, as an entirely separate bill and not a part of the criminal code?
I suggested that, and Judge Burns had reservations about it that seemed quite valid to me, so I kind of backed off of it. That was my original thinking.
I could think of several other things if we get into that sort of thing. I think several other things that I'd like to see submitted as
separate
bills, and I think that one of the strengths of any revision of this kind, we showed in things like the insurance law, where there were some similar suggestions and requests, the Uniform Commercial Code, and some of these other things, is that
I think you're right.
Present a package.
Well, there's a motion before us. Any further discussion?
My problem is this, Mr. Chairman, that I'm sufficiently persuaded by the acumen of the legislative members of this commission that to have any meaningful gun control, to use a perhaps invidious word, to have any meaningful gun control in the package will kill it. I take it that that's a correct analysis of the situation.
Well, I think one or several things would happen. When the legislature started considering it, they would direct their attention to this one particular thing. They would either delete that or amend it. Or it might cause them to explore the rest of the code in a little greater detail and could bring about the defeat of the whole thing.
Well, anyway, my position is I'm unwilling to risk killing the whole code, however strongly I may feel about this particular area. So I hope what the commission does is to direct the subcommittee to proceed along the general line suggested by the staff, which essentially doesn't make much change except the one indicated. I do so reluctantly, but I made the motion simply to get a policy decision. I have no desire to put anybody on the spot. If there's a better way to accomplish the necessary direction from the commission to the subcommittee, I'll be happy to withdraw my motion. I expect to vote against the motion. For the reasons I've mentioned.
Would you consider expanding the work staff has done, which you've outlined earlier, to the extent that handguns only must be registered and license obtained for them, without getting into the area of the reasons that you must have for obtaining such a license? In other words, anybody who applied for a license could obtain one.
I really don't think this is such a potent a political issue, particularly as it affects me. I think most people have reached the point where they are sympathetic to some sort of quote-unquote gun control legislation. Now, there's the hardcore NRAs that are against it, but I don't think they're in the mainstream. I know that the proponents of gun control say that every gun should be registered. I'm not persuaded that that is really necessary if we get into a question in this area. But what I think I'd like to see, Mr. Chairman, is some legislation which provides that every person that owns a gun meet certain minimum standards, certain minimum qualifications, whether you not be an ex-felon, not be a mental defective, if he's a juvenile, say, have passed the Hunter's course or whatever they have. I'm familiar with these courses and they have them in Portland, and I think they do a tremendous amount of good in teaching young people how to properly handle weapons. And once you have obtained this license, which we could say would be good for 3 years or 5 years, it wouldn't make any difference how many guns you had. I think you get into an equal protection question. Sure is simple. When you talk in terms of a person not having a gun for a good reason, well, maybe a person in the country can have it to protect his house, whereas a person in the city can't.
You're talking about handguns.
I know you are. But I still think you get into any protection question. I'm inclined to think that this general licensing thing would meet with acceptance, both for handguns and long guns. Anybody, before he can own a firearm, has to meet certain minimum criteria. I think that's a first step that would be down the middle of the road and that would not be objectionable to the people on either side of this issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Interestingly enough, the fellow who represented the NRA seemed to agree that it would be a good idea if everybody at least went through her safety course to, in order to use a gun. And so he would even go along with some kind of standard set for who we allowed to run around with guns. I thought his position was quite reasonable, as a matter of fact. In fact, I thought both people delivered quite a reasonable discussion on the matter.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't it seem logical then that all you'd have to do is say that to own it, to have a hand or any type of gun in the state of Oregon, you have to have a hunter's license?
Well, because there are no standards applied to anybody.
Well, the kids now have to pass a course.
Mm-hmm. Well, the kids do, but that takes 60 years to get to people like you and me.
Well,
we have to die first. We have to die first.
John, would that contemplate everyone presently owning a gun having to report it initially?
I don't think you'd have to report the gun. I mean, but I think that you would say you're out hunting, and the officer stops you, and just as he asks you for your hunting license, he asks you for your gun license, or just as if when you're driving a car, he asks you for your driver's license.
Yes, but you would contemplate making it unlawful to possess a gun if you didn't have the.
Yes, I would. I would.
John,
therefore, you'd have to report everything that's in the state.
Well, you wouldn't. If I own a .22 rifle, I would have to go down and apply for a license and be granted that license, and if I were refused it, I'd have to divest myself of the firearm that I own.
You're certainly setting up you're going to end up setting up an elaborate administrative framework to do something.
In the first instance, to bring everybody within the law that presently have guns is going to be a very cumbersome thing, whichever way we go, registration, handgun licensing, or whatever. But we have to, I think, look at this in terms of its prospective merit after the thing is ironed itself out.
Mr. Chairman, John, while the guy's down to getting his firearms licensed, do you have any objection to us having him register the guns too? And the reason I say this, and why I'm kind of a bug on registration, is that guns are commonly trafficked in as stolen property. It's a commonly stolen item. And if we have all those registered, the police would find this of great use in recovering stolen firearms. And also would lead them to people who were potential committing other crimes and so on. It gives the police a check on it. We register automobiles by license, by registration numbers and body numbers and motor numbers and
right.
stuff. I just think it would be a great tool for the police to have.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have the motion repeated.
Would you restate the motion?
For the benefit of Mr. Frost,
the commission will direct the subcommittee and staff to prepare a draft of which would include registration and licensing of handguns. The licensing provisions of which would permit denial of licenses to certain specified classes and would provide some review procedure for review of license decisions.
If that motion passes, Mr. Chairman, are we precluded then from taking up a motion to extend it to?
No.
Right. Call for a question.
I'd like to. Tony, you raised, I still think, this one particular issue does deserve separation from the whole code. Not being a member of the legislature any longer, but I have some idea what they're thinking about. If you're going to walk into a real can of arms with the whole code.
It would be submitted to this, but undoubtedly, if it were a separate bill, it would undoubtedly go to the same committee, would be subject just as much to their review and change, whether it's part of the code or whether it's a separate bill.
It wouldn't necessarily go to the same committee. Because the county action people pointed out, the gun control bill last time was sufficient.
It would go to state and federal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm proceeding on the basis, maybe this is erroneous, I am proceeding on the basis that it is unwise to have this as a separate bill. If that is a wise decision, that's certainly the way I'd go, but what I'm fearful of is that there are other areas that are a little bit touchy, and I don't want to start, start to two or three other areas that we could mention here in separate bills either, because that defeats the whole idea of what we're doing here. My position is based on the assumption that it's unwise and uncode-like, if you want it, to say it that way, to separate any subject matter out that's within the general criminal law framework.
I don't think we can afford to just to separate out one issue because we feel there's controversy in it and not go for
there's
sex.
A different kind of controversy here.
You've got different people than you have in the sex business.
No, there's a different political
situation. Are you sure?
Are you sure? I've seen legitimate polls on this question. I think most people would be surprised if they
at the depth of
there is a majority in every area of the state that's in favor of some kind of gun control. But there is also a strong minority in different than most issues.
Very
this
cool.
is one of those kind of issues. If that vote. That vote is, I'm going to vote against Tony Maturi in favor of them. And everything else is irrelevant.
Well,
and,
Wally?
That has political significance to any politician.
I think we're making a mistake. We think this is going to go through like the probate code or the education or the insurance code. We got that stuff in there right now without even bringing up gun control. If we think that's going to escape through House and Senate judiciary, without being looked over pretty carefully. I think if you believe that, you have a different impression of what's in there already. And I think that I agree with the judge that we gotta put it in as our best guess, or best study, I should say, of what the code ought to be. And there are problems of splitting out the ways and means, but both the House and Senate Judiciary, or whatever committee it goes to, has full capability of taking it out then and making the political judgment. I think we ought to make the criminal law judgment today, and let the representatives and senators make the political judgment next year.
I agree with that. I was just wondering, is there anyone here who has any objection to looking at a draft that involves only handguns?
The draft is a part of our
code.
I would. And I speak as an ex-politician. I think we've got enough problems already in this code. As Wally said, I think without the tap, this could very well be the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. This also is an issue, like sex, which everybody can understand. The more complex things we have in there right now are going to be difficult to every public, the guy who's interested to get a handle on it. There's too much of it, and that, quite frankly, was a saving grace of the probate code and the insurance code.
My only
gun
point.
Gun control is not. Gun control is such an emotional issue, I think it can sink the whole thing, at least cause enough controversy to not have it at all easy going.
My only point, Dave, was this. At this moment, as we're contemplating handgun control, registration and licensing, we're overlooking undoubtedly some of the matters that will be contained in that draft. And if they were brought to our attention right now, we'd either be perhaps any one of those elements would be sufficient to either cause us to favor it or to oppose it. I personally would like to see something before us that's concrete, but I'm just wondering.
Well, I agree with that as far as I think I'm looking.
Well, what you're saying, Mr. Chairman, then I take it isn't that we should simply produce a draft in this
on
general ballpark and bring it back to you.
On handguns only.
On handguns.
Well, that's just a discussion now, so that we don't spend a whole lot. If none of the commission wants to have
let's
anything
on
gun control,
on
we can we won't waste all the time in subcommittee bringing something to the committee.
Well, there's something to that.
Everybody's just opposed to it in principle, the general principle.
John, when you get through, there's been a call for the question. I'm going to call a roll.
Okay. I simply want to say, I think we...
Okay, but...
No.
Well, you got to rebuttal it three times already, John.
All right. We owe it to ourselves, or we have a responsibility, I think, to at least look at a draft and make a policy decision here and direct the staff to prepare a draft that we can look at our next meeting and make a decision on. And if we approve that draft at that meeting and it is printed in our tentative code, that'll be distributed and from which we will receive a response, we can, before the session starts, delete it if we feel that it's going to be too controversial. We can make a decision at that time as to whether it'll be submitted as a separate bill. But I think that we have a tremendous responsibility to face up to the issue of gun control. And I'm going to support the motion. I'm going to support a broadening of the proposal if it passes or if it fails, either way.
I wish you hadn't gone to that platform convention.
Dorchester?
No.
Dorchester?
As the captain of a sinking ship, can I say we could also, in line with what John has said, spend 3 or 4 days on this subject alone. I don't think we have the time for it.
Question. Mr. Chairman, before the question is...
Gentlemen, this is the last straw. Voice.
I said earlier, if there's a motion that will better solve it, I'll be happy to withdraw mine. But it just occurred to me that there's some way the decision will be made.
Call roll.
Judge Burns?
No.
Sandra Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Jernstead?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
No. Motion is carried. So the staff will produce something. Now that's as far as we want to go today on this subject, isn't it?
No.
Nobody else wants to go a step further.
All except four of us want to go one step further.
All right. Discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Senator Burns is going to make a motion.
Well,
in my behalf. Because I'm not running for office now or in the future.
Well, you better make the motion.
I'll make the motion that Senator Burns will now state.
I think the staff should prepare this draft to envision both, sorry, envision all kinds of firearms. Now, Judge Burns has framed his motion, or framed his motion in the past in terms of registration and licensing, and I happen to think, or would favor,
as a handgun.
Yeah, I happen to think that we should go to licensing of all guns as a first step, and licensing of all gun owners. And what I would envision would be that if this were to pass, the statute would give all gun owners in the state, for example, a year within which to secure licenses. So I would move.
And to register them.
Could you split it? Make a difference between licensing the.
Well, I was just going to move that the previous motion be expanded to include all guns.
Second.
As a first step, then if you want to split it later.
I move the table.
Motion is not debatable. Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Sandra Burns?
That's on his motion to table my motion. No.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
No.
Clark?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Jernstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Spaulding?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Out.
You get tabled.
Okay.
Chairman, I move that we extend the
John. I know she wants to see it.
Don't go too far, John.
Licensing. The licensing provision of Judge Byrne's motion, which passed to the bearers of all firearms.
What? What, ma'am?
The licensing provision.
Same motion, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see if we understand that. State it in simple terms.
Simple terms would require a state license to carry a firearm. Mm-hmm.
Same motion.
Of any kind.
John, we need you.
All right, it's not debatable, but I think we should permit John and Senator Burns to be here. How do you vote?
Here he is.
The motion has been made to require the owners of all or any,
The carrier.
The carrier of guns to be licensed, all types of guns. And Attorney General Johnson has moved to table the motion. Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
No.
Carson?
No.
Chandler?
No.
Clark?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Spalding?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Fail.
Motion has failed. Discussion on the motion.
Question.
I'm not sure what it means.
Question.
Excepting that I think it's intended to mean
anybody
caught in the movement of a firearm.
A firearm in his possession would have to have a license.
Well that is what you said.
That isn't what you said. No, and that's why I'm wondering what it means.
Carrying and possession would be.
Well, you fellows got me all tangled up in this legalese.
Well, I thought that you meant what you now said.
Anyone who owns a gun must have a license.
Owns or
what if I borrow
owns or possesses.
Yeah. We're not talking about the registration of the gun itself.
Right.
We're
no.
talking about the registration of an individual.
I'm talking about a guy who's got a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the same guy. I own a gun and I got it in my car or in my pocket or carrying it in my arm or something else, I should have to have a state license.
Or in your house.
Or if I got it in my house or if I got
it in
my...
Well, you control it, yeah.
Trunk
yeah.
of my car or anything else.
Airplane?
I should have to have a state license. An airplane, I do have one. An airplane. And I should be required to have a state license to do so.
Any further discussion?
Question.
Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
No.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Jernstedt?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knight?
Aye.
Spalding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Carson, he's still on the top.
Hey, what?
Motion is carried.
So,
staff will prepare a draft on this licensing.
I think that this takes care of the situation as I envision. I think that the tradable firearm and the one that moves in stolen gun commerce is more likely to be a handgun than a long gun.
If we hadn't passed the handgun thing, I probably would have voted for this. I think this is probably adding to take care of the whole damn thing.
Well, that's what I
think. No, I think that there's getting a lot of traffic in the long guns being transferred down south. We had a number of long guns around the just plain disappearing.
This will come back to
you. That's long guns.
Yeah.
This applies to all.
Here?
Mr. Chairman, before we leave the subject, would hope that Don and Roger would indicate to us whether or not from a drafting standpoint the policy direction is sufficiently clear.
John?
Well, I think that I understand it. You've tried to draw a distinction between registration and licensing.
We're basically, as I understand it, we're basically talking what we now call a concealable weapon of both registration and licensing. And in the case of other weapons, licensing. Now that's That's my understanding.
Now, does the commission want this combined as one draft, or do you want alternative drafts submitted? In other words, do you want one to do what was envisioned by your first motion with respect to handguns and a separate draft?
I think we can go to the same article.
Section one,
yeah.
Section two.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything further under gun control legislation?
We should have an interesting time in subcommittee the way the vote is taking on today here.
And Mr. Chairman, is there any way to be transferred out of my subcommittee?
Want to give it to Senator Carson?
That's right.
Later. Yeah. We're not. I'm not sure what I'd vote on the ultimate thing. You want to take a look at it.
But on the subcommittee, the votes have been going down 2-2.
This will never get back in the subcommittee.
All right. Defenses against privacy of communication. Roger, I think you had that area, didn't you?
What are we doing about machine guns?
That is covered under
licensing.
Yeah, but boy, do one of us people run around anti-tank bazookas machine guns? That scares the hell out of me.
I think we ought to put it in the hands of college students so they can demonstrate better.
That's right. Get some action on the faculty.
Well, that was one of the things I had. These guys are running around.
You do? We talked about this.
Okay. I draw my utterances.
Does that gun control thing go to the same subcommittee?
It's going to come back to the commission.
It's supposed to subcommittee number three.
Are you both of them?
Are you guys?
It's been going down 2-2. I don't think subcommittee will ever come to a decision.
Oh, thank you.
No.
Well, you can have a minority report, man.
Two minorities.
Yeah,
both on the losers.
Fail to carry by a tie vote. Nelly.
These are the amendments we were talking about two commission meetings ago that conformed to the federal, basically.
Bob wasn't here the last time.
I wasn't here the last
time. We had 4-4 ties all over the lot.
We only ended up with 1 or 2 sections.
We had a decision made. With respect to all but two sections.
Which were they?
We had section 21. We had subsection 4. Now this is on page 19. Page 19 is where it begins. So subsection 4, Mr. Chairman, on page 20 is a subsection where we ended up with this. We had a standoff on that.
Page 20 is the subsection 4.
Well, subsection 4 of section 21 is on page 20.
Now, it's on page 28 of the minutes of February 20th, as we went through the sections, as we got to section 21, see on page 28 of your minutes, that roll call vote was taken on approval of section 21. Members disagreed on the inclusion of subsection 4, and the motion failed on a tie vote. Chairman Curry stated that section 21 would be reconsidered at the next meeting of the commission. So,
section 21 that we're talking about.
Well, looking at those who voted no, Mr. Chairman, and those who voted aye, and the way that things are going, I move to approve subsection 4 of section 21.
Now, then,
Someone's learning to count.
Man, I wish you owned the Oregonian.
How come I didn't vote on that?
Yes, you did. You voted yes, but Lee left. You see, that left us back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, how am I supposed to vote, Frank?
Aye, you're right, Lee.
For a while, we were holding up the court while Tony was going
to play a boss or young. I move we defer this a
Now the discussion, Mr. Chairman, on that section appears on pages 21 and 22 and half of page 23 of your minutes.
The basis of this section is whether a law enforcement officer is lawfully eavesdropping, say for one on a kidnapping, here's evidence of a murder, whether he can use that evidence of a murder going to be committed to act upon or not. And that's basically what this section is about. Whether they, if they hear evidence of another crime while lawfully eavesdropping, can it be used or can it not be used?
I'm reminded of what Justice Frankfurter said one time. He said, the answer you get often depends on the way in which the question is put. I think you put it admirably, Frank. I do detect a little sandbagging in the comment, but...
Not what, Jim.
Are you all familiar, subsection 4, 21?
After reading these minutes, for as long as I have, Mr. Chairman, I recognize that Miller says expressed opposition to somebody blew his stack.
You ever see vehemently, I thought the words would be bullet holes in the law.
Are you ready to vote on this?
Question.
Call the roll.
Which
subsection 4, section 21?
Approval.
Approval of subsection 4.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
No.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Frost?
No.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spalding?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Frost? Young?
No, no.
That wasn't so difficult, fellas.
I've got a lot of sections of this code I'd like to take up today. Section 23, Mr. Chairman, that's on page 22 of your amendment. And there's some new language that appears that's been pasted in to reflect instruction by the commission, and that the staff was to draft some language and bring it back to you for approval. I think the basic policy has been approved with respect to the release of this information by the state to the defendant. And the question was, well, in what form would this information be presented or furnished by the state? And the direction was, the decision of the commission was that it would be a written transcript. And then we discussed also the question of the derivative evidence might be obtained as a result of the eavesdropping. And the motion was made and approved to increase the time period from 10 days before the commencement of trial to 30 days. That's reflected in the amendment. And then the new language appears about halfway down, about three quarters of the way down in the section, after the words was authorized or approved, and the new language would be, and a written transcript of the contents of the intercepted communication intended to be used by the state at the trial, or from which evidence was derived that is intended to be used at the trial.
This is a pretty broad discovery procedure, isn't it, compared to what we used to follow in our courts and various types of
laws. Well, we've gone here with a very broad discovery on the part of the state in the use of the East.
Not in the sense that any motion to suppress the evidence obtained by search and seizure is made known as a result of the execution of the search warrant. He has to leave a receipt with him, and he knows what he's got, and so on. So that it isn't that they grab something and secrete. Make secret its identity or anything like that in the analogous situation.
So some of those returns get immediately lost.
Well, but if the defendant's on his toes, the statute provides plenty of grounds for challenging the procedure.
And this protects the defendant, the amendment that we made here.
Well, it sure does. I'm just not sure I want to protect it.
I think on this one, unless we're prosecuting.
Is it clear here, or what do we really mean that what we're talking about is that giving him a written transcript of that portion that you intend to use at the trial? Or is it, say, if the you can get a warrant for 30 days, suppose the tap was on the telephone for 28 days, they're furnishing him a complete transcript of the whole 28 days of wiretapping. I mean, that...
What if they don't want to use you at the time of trial?
What we're talking about here is that which you're going to use at the trial,
or
and that which from which evidence was derived. And this is going to be kind of a...
Of course, the only thing I get out of it, which is follow the usual.
A difficult thing sometimes to determine.
Well, follow the usual procedure. Why, I was looking over some transcripts here a couple of months ago at the Court of Appeals. Defense transcripts based on or intended to be used in an appeal, and they were transcribing things and furnishing transcripts of stuff that's never going to be involved in the appeal. Are we going to wind up with the district attorney furnishing all 28 days because he might want to use some of this thing? We're going to have the darndest stack of stuff.
I think it's clear that we're not, Mr. Chairman. I think
that's our intention. I just wonder what the practical...
We can express as a matter of legislative intent right here that is not our intention, and I'm sure that would be controlled.
Yeah. Now also, this section 2 here, if something develops at the time of trial, say in the defense case, where then some further wiretap evidence then becomes material, and it wasn't before, well, this 30-day period can be waived by the trial.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment on that? I'm aware of the practice of some of the jurisdictions where the trial is set less than 30 days in advance. And speaking for myself, at least, I think we should get an expression commission policy on this. I would not envision subsection 2 to attach in a situation where the trial was set, trial date was given the defendant 2 weeks hence, and the court says, well, it wasn't possible to furnish you with the papers within the meaning of the statute, therefore I'm going to waive the requirement of subsection 1.
You'd have to find further that the defendant wouldn't be prejudiced.
Defendant, I'm sure it's not be prejudiced, or the state wouldn't be using it.
This
is one of the things that bothers me too about this thing. Like, say that you feel you're supplying them what you're going to use, and you give them your notice that you're going to be using wiretap evidence. So you give them your transcript. Well, at that point, the defendant can decide whether he's going to need that full 30 days or whether he'd be prepared to go to trial in the 2 weeks' time that's set. Either that or the trial will be set sometime after the 30 days. But suppose that during the trial, that further evidence becomes material. Suppose on the wiretap you happen to have one of the defendant's witnesses saying something entirely different than what he's saying now testified to in court, so you want to use that to impeach him, except for this phrase that the defendant will not be prejudiced, the court, you know, could waive the 30-day service on that ground that you didn't have any.
Well, but it seems to me that the subsection 2 is has some desired flexibility. If the defendant brings on his key witness who says, you know, he didn't sell it, he didn't sell the narcotics, and you've got a dandy tape where this guy said, boy, I should have made a big buy from the defendant. And it's one of those you didn't furnish in advance, all you do is just say, next recess, or as soon as you get the jury out of the room, I seek relief under subsection 2.
And it's on prejudice for defense.
Well,
yeah. How's the judge going to find it's not going to prejudice?
Well, by furnishing enough time, a recess in the trial, enough time for the tape and the transcripts to be examined by the defendant. Mm-hmm. The purpose of
what we mean by prejudice is not that it's going to hurt him. It's that
he has time to
examine the transcript and this thing.
Just like a case I had not too long ago.
Well, don't you need the word unreasonably then before the word prejudice?
I don't think so.
Well, any evidence against the defendant prejudice?
Well, just like a case I had not too long ago where the state goofed and didn't give the defendant a copy of his statement. He's clearly entitled to it. He applied for it, and it so happened the deputy who was handling the prelim got the file that morning and didn't realize it. As a matter of fact, I think what happened is he asked the detective, and the detective said he didn't make a statement. Well, he asked the wrong detective because he made a statement.
Some of the detectives always give you the wrong answer.
Yeah, but Bruce, you see here, this says, it doesn't say just prejudice. It says prejudice by the delay.
Well, that is important.
In other words,
what you do in that case?
That's right.
I made him show it, and I said, now you can take all the time you want to look it over and analyze it and so forth and so on. And he squawked like the devil, but I just kept saying, now would you please put on the record the basis on which you feel you are prejudiced by this failure? And he kept squawking, and I kept letting him make all the record he wanted. But there isn't a thing in the record that shows, in fact, prejudice to his case. So there's no problem there.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's implicit that prejudice means unfair prejudice under due process, not the fact that it's an element or a matter of proof or evidence toward his crime.
Prejudice by the delay.
Yeah, word by the delay in there.
Because, as you said, any evidence that tends to indicate he committed the crime is prejudicial in the sense that it's nailing him down. But I don't think we intend to mean that prejudice.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question also. As I read the amendment, the state would be required to furnish the transcript of the part they intend to use or the transcript of the part from which they have derived evidence. Now, query, does this language require the state to identify the derived evidence? I think this is something that isn't clear from the language, and I see a problem.
Well, isn't that clear when it says, from which evidence was derived?
Well,
no.
Well, in other words, then I take it that under this present wording, the state would simply say to the defendant, here is a transcript of the tape, of the tapes of the July 28, 29, and 30th. We intend to use these and evidence derived therefrom at the trial. Period. And at this point, the defendant says, Your Honor, I want to be apprised of the derivative evidence. Answer does he get under this language?
Well, he would have to, at that point, it would seem to me that the state would have to show what evidence that they intended to, or what conclusions they intended to reach, and say, we base this upon this tape in which John Doe said so-and-so to so-and-so.
If you intend that result, then I'm not sure that this language says that.
I had a contrary impression.
This is what I feel is necessary under this, is to provide him, this is a transcript of evidence, a transcript of wiretap that we are required to furnish you under section 23. Of offenses against the privacy of communication. And I think that what you are talking about, Tony, is something that goes further into full discovery of another sort and is not necessarily...
Well, then your understanding is that you would simply furnish him a tape under section 23, and then it would be up to him to draw his own conclusions as to what evidence you were going to... claim derived from this particular
case. Sometimes you got a pretty, sometimes it's going to be pretty clear, like, say, that on the wiretap, the guy says the gun is hidden out behind a tree, or we disposed of the body in such and such a place, and you go out and you find the body there. Well, then, that tape is pretty clear what evidence you're going to produce from what's in it. But there might be other types of situations where the evidence from the wiretap helps you from what you heard on the wiretap, but there's going to be, you got the information from other sources also. But from rather than to, because you're probably going to give them more than you have to just to be sure, and you're not. You may not even know really whether that evidence is derived from that tape, but you're going to supply it to him to be sure.
Then you're going to give him 10.
That's your impression, John.
Instead of three, so that he'll spend more time.
Mine was the opposite.
Maybe not see it.
Well, so in other words,
like in the news case, where they let him go down and see
the two stories with
the evidence when he wants to examine the things taken from him.
State has fulfilled its obligations
when it read all through
the tape.
Three rooms.
Apparently.
Without identification of the derived evidence.
A written transcript.
I tapes and transcripts. Well, that was the way I understood the direction of the commission at the last meeting, that this was to put the defendant on notice that you intend to use
wiretap
evidence and to give him a transcript, but not to turn over a list of all your evidence or...
I'm a little bit mixed up on derived.
Fruit from the poisonous tree concept.
If Bruce and I are on the telephone and I tell him, well, I told Don yesterday that we were going to have to get rid of this guy, and then they go out, and this is the first time Don's name has been mentioned, so they go chasing out Don and says, oh, yeah, he told me that. is that derived from the tape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Then any mention that leads eventually to some other,
some other physical evidence or testimonial evidence, that be derived evidence.
All right.
but
it was just an investigatory lead.
Problem arises where it might be derived from a number of different.
Yeah. So if it's just a lead to an investigation that results somewhere along the line in finding somebody who knows something or finding a gun or.
Well, I'm only ready to have the legislative history clear on it.
You know, you think in view of our discussion that it's any more clear?
Yeah, I think it's clear what this section means. And I think we have one other consideration too, since we're talking about discovery. What relationship would this section have adopted to the present defense discovery, where the thing belongs to the defendant, which includes a statement and articles of clothing? Is his written or his oral communication to someone else when it's in the hands of the police then subject to that same discovery? Because I don't think we're going to change that.
This would assume the same status as the situation Judge Burns elaborated on with respect to the search warrant, I think.
Well, in this area, though, the 28-day surveillance and wiretap, I think under that present discovery statute, the defendant would have the right to the entire thing. If it's in the
court. I don't think so, Dave. I think that relates to statements made by the defendant to the arresting officer.
Well, it's also any. Like what you're doing, what it has to do, I use it to get autopsy pictures. Yeah. Maybe well, it's something nice for our answer.
You're entitled to the autopsy pictures in a different form.
I think it's.
What ground is right now? What ground?
The autopsy report.
130. You can find what you can get from one side or both sides, don't know exactly what you're entitled to.
What ground? Frank, what ground?
I'm going to do it after everything.
Why are you entitled to autopsy reports on another ground? Is there there's not a statute?
Yeah,
they try to withhold them from you in Multnomah County occasionally.
We always provide it.
I don't think, I've never run across another statute that provides specifically for autopsy.
This is why the Attorney General wanted to have a little more greater control over the very quick. Get it from Multnomah County. Please, no, you're not creating any friction with yourself.
He doesn't want it. I'm the one that wanted it to give it to him.
I thought you got the autopsy pictures under that discovery statute.
Okay,
you're doing now your
time. But generally, they say, I have a case and they just didn't want to give them to me.
You get them?
Well, I filed a civil case for wrongful death. Took the deposition and got it that way. I got it. Generally, they give them to you unless it's a close case.
Well, I move we approve section 23 as amended. Question?
Is the use of the word waived in the first line of citation the right word? It connotes that the judge has a right to that 30 days himself. He's waiving.
30 day period.
Wouldn't shortened be better? Wouldn't the word shortened be better or diminished? This connotes that the judge is claiming a right to the 30 days.
Well, isn't this the same language that we use throughout the criminal code on similar, well, like in the alibi statute, for example, where we say for good cause, the statutory requirement can be waived.
Isn't this
on the notice of insanity,
yes, it is
the same language.
This comes from chapter 119 of Title 18.
It's okay with me. It's obvious what we're meaning by it. I'm just wondering if it's.
Call roll.
Judge. In favor of the section.
Approval.
Aye.
As amended.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Carr.
Aye.
Brock.
Aye.
Jernstead.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Baldy.
Aye.
Mr. Trent.
Aye.
Carrie. Is there anything else?
Yeah, we do have some other.
Oh, that second. We're going to
take a look at it. Now,
fight for the bone, guys.
If you'll go, well, beyond page 24, the next two pages in your book, at the end of your amendments, we have two other sheets for your consideration. I'll let Roger discuss the first page with you, the section on unlawful dealing and eavesdropping devices, and why it appears in your book.
Well, Commissioner Clark asked that I draft a statute on this.
this same prohibition is contained in Title 18, Section 2512. And this section is based upon that federal statute. The federal statute only applies to interstate commerce in these type of devices, where this prohibition would reach intrastate traffic in eavesdropping devices. On reviewing the draft, I don't know that, for example, in subsection A, that sends through the mail is necessary, because I believe that once it would be deposited with the post office department, it would come under the federal law in any event.
Boy, the section sub D under section 2 is surreptitious electronic eavesdropping.
Well, I don't know what success the federal law is going to have in this area. The problem, obviously, is that there's a multitude of devices that can be used for legitimate purposes, and in this area,
intercom systems in houses, there's a lot of things that you've got to have some exclusion clause.
That tape recorder.
Yeah.
Where's the tape recorder? look under the flowers.
And I suspect that most of the traffic in these type of devices and the advertising is interstate in nature. At least when I was in the investigative business, we used to get a lot of salesmen and periodicals advertising for these type of devices, but I never received one that represented a company within the state of Oregon.
Well, practically all the media in the state are in interstate commerce.
I think this is a good thing.
I think it's completely unenforceable. Build a page last night.
It does come out to the full page. You make that for
it. I can't put a design. It was well.
I don't think it is unenforceable. I think it's necessary.
Well, the selling and possessing of it probably are enforceable, but they can always, any of those damn things are composed of parts that are innocent. And if you know enough about them, you can put them together. And then you would be guilty of possessing one with the intent to use it.
In the sidelight, too, it's kind of interesting, the FCC recently had a ruling on whether or not you lease an instrument from someone other than a telephone company for the purpose of, well, lots of devices are attached to the telephone. And the companies were complaining that you couldn't use their leased wire facilities to put in a privately owned instrument. The FCC said, like, heck you can't. Are we going right back again then and saying only the telephone company or its agents may produce and advertise and sell and or lease this type of instrument in subsection A of 2?
Well, I'd ask the same question on what they call parabolic microphones that you use in ball games. Where would they fit here? NBC is not a communications kind of carrier? Or
yes, it is.
Is it?
Sure. They carry a license. They carry it to their network affiliates and other people who may buy it from them. They're not necessarily network affiliates.
Would Channel 3 here in Salem, DVD, TV,
TV, TV? If it was feeding into the network, it would be a...
No network.
It well, could be.
Okay, well, as long as they become a communications kind of carrier, I'm not worrying about it, but I thought that was just like the telephone and telegraph. Is that
true? I think I would guess they'd be a common carrier. They're regulated pretty thoroughly by...
Yeah, but not with the Public Utilities Commission, are they? So federal FCC.
You're dealt with the FCC.
I would move the adoption of this section.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment. I do have the ability to put the mail in the third jurisdiction.
I would remove my motion and include his amendment.
Where will you find this?
Section A.
Section A.
Well, and also in 2.
Yeah.
Yes, send through the mail.
Complete defense of this is that the device was not designed primarily for surreptitious electronic eavesdropping,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that it wasn't done with the intent.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can't have a tape recorder.
Not there. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, a tape recorder, of course, could be used in, because it's not designed primarily for
surreptitious electronic eavesdropping. You didn't use it, so
you've really got, you know, just plain old wiretap stuff.
What about the phone companies you're getting? The little device, you lay the phone down on it, it automatically reverts it down to say
induction required.
So what's it all?
Yeah.
What's your background in this little
Well, actually, the essence of your motion would be to delete section one.
No. I would delete it.
Or just the first
delete
word
the comma. Yeah, delete the word send through the mail, comma. And capitalize the T.
To delete send through the mail.
Where is that?
Section two.
Yeah. Delete the words
send
through the mail.
And comma.
Comma. And then there's another one down here. And the last one.
Well, in sub D,
strike the word mail, comma.
In sub what?
D. Sub D of D.
Can I make a policy statement, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, you certainly may.
Every time the law tries to stay ahead of science, the law ends up looking like the proverbial ass. That's what we're doing here.
Well, I'll tell you,
will you state your motion again, Mr.
Chairman? Indifferent about it. Hopefully. Would you state the motion as amended?
His motion is to amend.
Motion is to amend.
Oh, all right.
You want me to repeat the
motion? Is to adopt the whole damn thing so far as it's material. It just isn't material to talk about the mail because that's in the
middle.
Well, I didn't know if he struck that.
No, I didn't too. But, I mean.
It's a motion to strike. You want me to repeat it?
No, isn't your motion to amend is to strike on sub A the words sends through the mail and change transport to a capital letter. And then in subsection 2, first and second line, delete send through the mail. And on 2D, delete the word mail.
Right.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Carried. Opposed? Carried.
Move the approval to amend.
You've heard the motion. You approve as amended. Any further discussion?
Question.
Call and roll.
Judge Grooms?
Aye.
Sandy Grooms? Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Nye?
Aye.
Spalding?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carried.
Positive.
Now, this was what we left for passage the next sheet here, the crime that would be covered in that section that referred to the crimes in which this could be used.
Yes, now this is the